Blog Talk Radio. Celebrating their 20th year in radio broadcasting, with views not heard in the news, the International Taz and Paula Show interviews experts from all walks of life, bridging research and personalized journeys, revealing new ways to unleash life with a passion of a heartbeat. And now, here's Taz and Paula.
Well, here's to an incredible day to all of our listeners. Grab an easy chair and spend the next hour with us enjoying a great way to uplift your day. Our guest, Tom T. Moore, is an award-winning author, speaker, and is in the entertainment business where for over 25 years he has been president and CEO of his own international motion picture and TV program distribution business based in Dallas, Texas. Tom has stretched with continuous open arms to capture his thrilling ride about the truth of our world and other universes as well. And lucky for us, he's placed in his latest book, Atlantis and Lemuria, and I think there's some information in The First Contact as well. We'll be talking about all of his books for sure today. You are now listening to the International Taz and Paula Show. I'm Taz.
And I'm Paula. Well, we've known Tom since his first new book came out, and he's become one of our favorite guests and an old friend of ours. I shouldn't say old. I should say a good friend.
Thank you.
And the first book that, when we met him, that came out was The Gentle Way, a self-help guide for those who believe in angels. And then he has written three books since, A Gentle Way, Benevolent Outcomes, The Story Continues, and then The Gentle Way 3, Master Your Life, and First Contact, Conversations with an ET. And besides being an author, he has a great weekly newsletter that has so much information in it. We'll be sharing that with you today also. But we hear that there's a rumor going around that you have a new book coming out in September. Is that right, Tom?
That's true. It's the official name now, as far as I know, I don't think it'll be changed, is Atlantis and Lemuria, The Lost Continents Revealed.
Ah, wow.
Oh, that sounds exciting.
It's also
we're
a mouthful.
We're so happy to have you. We're so happy to have you back with us today. Welcome. And it's amazing. I wonder just how do you sleep with such exciting information arriving probably daily. So tell us exactly what ignited this last book for you to launch it, and tell us a little bit about it.
Okay.
How is it related to the Gentle Way books, or is it related?
It is. The questions started coming in around 2008, so I've actually been compiling this book, and I didn't know it was going to be a book, for a long time. Just one day I started looking at all the information I had on Atlantis and Lemuria, and I said, good night. This can make a book. and that's sort of how it happened. And probably I was also trying to procrastinate a little because my big behemoth book is still out there that I'm going to be writing, and it's going to be about my conversations with a guardian angel and Gaia, the soul of the earth, and that's going to be a big book. So I don't even know if I'll be able to contain it in one book or whether it'll go for two, but we'll see. So anyway, one day I was, had just read something about Atlantis or whatever, and I just asked this simple question, had I ever had any lives on Atlantis? And I take that back. I had I ask if where did the gentle way originate? Because and I asked the question about the lives later on, and so Theo said, Tom, and that always prepares me for some really interesting news coming along. He said, the gentle way dates back all the way to your days in Atlantis, where you were inspired to create the gentle way. See, I thought maybe the gentle way was, I knew it dated back at least to the 1600s, because that's when I first contacted, who's my main guide now, an Indian shaman that's also a member of my soul cluster, by the name of Reveals the Mysteries. And Reveals the Mysteries said that I was incarnating in this time period to reintroduce the people to the gentle way. And so that always kind of stuck in my mind. Reintroduced? Well, how far back does it go? 1,000 years? And little did I know it would go back over 12,500 years. And it seems that I had a life in ancient Atlantis about 200 years before the continent, or I should say before the Atlantean islands destroyed themselves. I was living on Poseidia, although I didn't know that in my initial questions. And it seems I had over 1 million people requesting benevolent outcomes. So I was informed in my meditations that Atlantis was going to destroy itself. And so I and 25,000 members of my flock, as it was called by Theo, upped and migrated from Poseidia through Portugal and Spain to what is now Egypt, and we resettled there. So that's how everything kind of started.
Tell us who Theo is so everyone will understand, okay, Tom?
I'm sorry?
Tom, tell us who Theo is so everyone will understand.
Oh, okay. Theo is the name that I've given my own guardian angel. And in my belief system, because that's what Theo tells me how it is, there is a golden light being that takes care of not only me, but in Theo's case, he takes care of about 19,000 plus other souls and all of the soul fragments that that they have having lives on Earth, because their souls are much more immense than we can imagine, and your soul can be having up to 500,000 lives all across the universe for its learning, all going on at the same time if it wishes to. And so so these golden light beings are assigned because they're much more knowledgeable and ancient than our souls are, which is why they glow with a golden light, and they monitor us 24 hours a day throughout all the lives we're having on Earth, which are all taking place at the same time. And so that's Theo's job, and he's handling all these souls. Each soul has anywhere from 6 to 12 soul fragments having lives on Earth, and they're all going on at the same time. And each life we have 12, there's a total of 12 timelines, which some people call parallel lives, but he calls them timelines, pardon me. And so there's 12 of us on each one of these lives, all having different experiences on different frequencies, so that the upper timelines are less hard, and the lower timelines are harder and more difficult.
Paul, I don't know about you, but I'm getting constant chi going in my body with all you're saying. Wow.
I know it's a lot, but I guarantee that this was revealed to me over a long period of time. As they say, they kind of spoon feed us the information as we're able to understand it. And so there's so much more to go. They tell me I've just kind of done the tip of the iceberg.
Like
now,
I said, how do you sleep?
I was told Atlantis was near the Azore Islands. Is that true?
Yeah, I was given for my book that everyone will see. I have the most detailed information ever in a book about Atlantis and Lemuria. Both Atlantis and Lemuria were about 10 to 12% larger than the continent of Australia. So if you can look at a world map and you see the size of Australia and then just imagine it a little 10% or so larger, it takes up a lot more space in the it took up a lot more space in the Atlantic Ocean than Lemuria did in the Pacific, because the Pacific is so large. So Atlantis was located, if someone wants to look at a world map that has longitudes and latitudes on it, the northern top of it would be at around 47 degrees latitude, running along there, and it was in the shape very roughly of a parallelogram. That was a big word for me to receive, let me tell you. And and it came within 30 miles of the what we call Africa now, but back in those days it was called Oz, the land of Oz, mysterious land of Oz. And and then it ran about 100 miles parallel to the North American coast, all the way down just past the tip of Florida, and it included what is now the Bahamian Islands, and it also included, of course, Bermuda would have been a remnant of it, and parts of the Azores, yes.
Wow.
Canary
Islands. Now, you said Bermuda. Does Bermuda Triangle have anything to do with Atlantis?
Partially. I may not have included this in the book, it's hard to remember. It's over 100,000 words, so it got hard to remember everything. But as I recall, there may be some large giant crystals that went down and sank that they were not able to save. So that's there was some knowledge towards the end that things were coming to an end. So some of the priests of that time were able to move some of the large crystals. These crystals, by the way, were upwards of like 20 to 25 feet tall. I mean, we're talking about giant quartz crystals. And so that's why they were able to have healing centers and all of and these were very advanced societies. Both of them lasted for over 50,000 years before they each destroyed themselves in a horrific two wars. And so in their heyday, all of their aircraft, which were saucer-shaped, because that's how they had seen the ET ships through the years. And so they were all saucer-shaped, and they all ran on these crystals, and it was like these huge crystals would send out beams of like a radio frequency, except different. And so it was limited by the curvature of the Earth, so they'd have to have, more than one of them for these aircraft to travel, for all vehicles. Everything ran on this free energy. I mean, any kind of home, the lighting in the homes, everything was given by these crystals, and people would have smaller crystals in their home that would receive these and power up whatever they had going.
Wow. I question if Atlantis is going to be coming back up. Have you gotten any message along that line?
No. It never will be. It's it was there. I was told that it's time for us to learn more about our history, because a lot of people just don't believe Atlantis or Lemuria ever existed. But these two societies, as I say, grew over 50,000 years and became very sophisticated. But they destroyed themselves in these horrific wars. I mean, as an example, the sons of Belial inhabited the islands of Aran and four other smaller islands, and they pulled a Pearl Harbor type attack on Poseidon, and they had these ray guns that would literally melt people and houses and even the earth itself. And 325 of these aircraft took off and did a sneak attack on Poseidon to try to and wipe them off the face of the earth, and they killed 1.5 million people the first day.
Well, why haven't we heard much about Atlantis? I mean, there's a lot of people that don't believe in Atlantis. I think Plato
mm-hmm.
wrote about Atlantis.
Yes.
Why hasn't it been more writing about Atlantis?
Well, of course, there weren't very many survivors. You actually had two major destructions of Atlantis. The second destruction was a natural disaster. It sat on top of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, and there were all these volcanoes running down the ridge, and bigger than, you know, the biggest volcanoes today, and they erupted and sank all the continent at that time, with the exception of the islands. Okay, and the oceans of the world at that time rose 160 feet all around the world, destroying every single village and town and city on the coast of every single continent. Okay, so that was the second destruction. When the islands sank, the oceans rose again 40 to 41 feet. You can say 40.5 feet if you want, but it's somewhere right in there, between 40 and 41 feet. And that's where the story of Noah came to be, because Noah, there really was a Noah, and I have a whole chapter on him in my book, and he really did build an ark, although he didn't have wild animals, it was domesticated. And when the oceans rose that 40, 41 feet, as each island sank into the ocean, you know, it'd go up another 5 or 10 feet. And so that's how you can imagine, if it was 160 feet, it would have been probably too much for them to survive, but only going up 41 feet or so, it was able to be lifted up, and it did carry them to Mount Ararat, although to a lower slope, not the upper one, not to the top of it, as has been speculated. So... And then you've got one more huge destruction when the Lemurians destroyed themselves in a war. There were five countries on that continent, and those and I found, I asked if I'd ever had a life on Lemuria, and I was told, Tom, you helped destroy Lemuria. So it turns out I was a religious leader that encouraged the leaders of my country to bomb these other two countries that we were at war with, and these were enormous bombs, much, much, much larger than our atomic bombs of Hiroshima or Nagasaki, and it split apart the continent and everybody sank. So it rose another 200 feet, I believe it was 175, 200 at that time, again, wiped out every single coastal city and town all over the world. So scientists have figured out that the oceans rose around 375 to 400 feet. They just thought that that the oceans were rising a foot or foot and a half per century or so, 1,000 years or whatever. And actually, these were three major events that caused the oceans to rise that amount.
I thought that Lemuria... I'm sorry.
amount of time between Atlantis and Lemuria. What was the amount of time between the two being destroyed?
5,000 years.
5,000 years. Okay.
Yes, from the end of the Atlantean islands to the end of Lemuria was 5,000 years.
Tom, I thought that Lemuria and Atlantis both were high technology. And I thought that they were higher beings of peace. And was
well,
that the
they were, especially Lemuria. At its zenith, everybody was nice and loving and, you know, meditation and so on, you know, live and let live. It was only in, like, the last 1,000 years that greed and corruption and power and all that stuff entered into it, and they destroyed themselves. But for thousands of years, they were very nice people.
Wow.
And the Atlanteans, you know, in their heyday, you couldn't say they were completely nice. I mean, they tried to conquer Oz, and they did conquer most of the coastal towns and what have you of the Mediterranean until things started getting worse for them, you know, internally, and they had to back off. But when they tried to conquer Oz, even with their ray guns and everything, these aircraft could not fly during the daytime. And so, you know, it would be like, if you recall the stories of the British and all, with these thousands of Maasai warriors and all, that's how they defeated the Atlanteans. They would come in at night, and even if they killed 1,000 of them with these ray guns, there were still 2,000 or 3,000 more that would slit everybody's throat. And I was told that I had a couple of lives where I was a soldier and was killed over in Oz because every 100 or... Are you there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I heard something. Every 100 or 300 years or whatever, some leader would say, oh, I'm sure we can conquer them. And they would try again, and they would, you know, they would wind up completely annihilated. And so they finally gave up trying.
So, you know, there were survivors. And where did they go? I mean, like...
Right. Well, as I say, my group was over 25,000. And so there was all this land. I had actually been taken, according to what I've been told, by Adama, who's, you know, the Lemurian of Telos under Mount Shasta. And
yeah.
And they had the ability to live like 300 or more years. And so he also had the ability, because they weren't pure Lemurians. They were from like another galaxy or something, and they had volunteered to help help train the explorer race in our nighttime, and so he knew about me some way or other, and called in one of the ET ships and took me and Antura, who was in my last book, Conversations with an E.T., First Contact Conversations with an E.T., took us both and showed us Egypt and showed that it would be a peaceful life as compared to trying to settle all these 25,000 people in Europe where people didn't like the Atlanteans. They had a long history of being conquered by them and so on and so forth, and we wanted a peaceful place. And so that's where we went. And I actually had dealings with Rata. And if anyone that has read the Edgar Casey books, he was Rata in a past life, and he was called, he had been banished away from Egypt, and I can't remember the reason why, but he had been banished, and they brought him back in order to deal with the Atlanteans. And so he wound up dealing with me, and I brought some of my healing stuff with me, but I had to lie to him because I didn't want anything to happen again like we saw was coming with Atlantis. And so I kept those fairly hidden away, but I became sort of the first priest doctor of Egypt, because I would heal the Egyptians along with any Atlanteans that needed healing.
Now, I heard somewhere, I don't know if you've heard this before, that the Easter Islands, that I guess the shamans there, they say that they came originally from Lemuria, that they escaped and went to the Easter Islands. Have you heard that before?
Yes. The Easter Islands were fairly close to Lemuria. Lemuria was, I think it was described as sort of like a potato shape, but not exactly, and it had a tail sort of in the middle. And it was actually, at one time, before the ocean started rising, it was connected to Japan in two or three places, but the waters rose and broke that connection. And there were people living on in Japan, you know, that were almost like indigenous to Japan. And one of the questions I asked was, did they ever, you know, go over and want to conquer them or anything? And I was told, no, there was plenty of room on Lemuria, and they had no desire to go there because these people were considered more very sort of tribal kind of people. You know what I mean? You know, just hunters, fishers, whatever, and not as sophisticated as the Lemurians. So they never did that. Now, obviously, there were people, you know, towards the end, the survivors, they saw this war getting worse and worse and worse for Lemuria. So there were people that did migrate to Japan and to China and probably Malaysia through that area, the Atlanteans, and I didn't finish mentioning where all they went to. Of course, a lot of Atlanteans went down towards the Yucatan coast and on down to Guatemala because these were warm climates, and they, you know, they liked the warmer weather.
Have any of the Lemurians gone to the inner earth, like Mount Shasta, and part of our inner earth as well?
Well, only, it's my understanding, from what I've been told, it was only this group of Lemurians that went to and founded Telos, and it took them about 100 years to raise, through very vigorous work. I've got a chapter on Adama, too. It took them about 100 years of very strenuous work to raise their vibrational level where they would never be bothered by any people in the Earth experiment that would be exploring the caves or whatever. So there, you just won't find them. Now, that said, they are able to lower their vibrational levels so that they actually will come and meet people that are at Mount Shasta, more like the locals. And the locals supposedly kind of keep this kind of quiet. But if somebody sees like a 7-foot person, a pale 7-foot person walking around, they think they're part of a basketball team, and they don't think of them as being from Telos.
Yeah, we had a guest from Mount Shasta, Robin LaPlante, and
mm-hmm.
she shared with us that she actually saw them coming down from the mountain. And
yes.
They were there in the dark, and they handed them a light. So.
Oh, that's
so
nice. The
locals do see them.
Yes, and in fact, when I was my wife and I attended a Lee Carroll summer conference at Mount Shasta several years ago, and two ladies in the elevator at the Holiday Inn we were staying at said that they had ridden on the elevator with 2 7-foot people.
Oh.
So they do make their appearances ever so often. And in fact, at that summer conference, there were two people that actually got married on stage, and I actually sat one row behind them or by them, and I asked the lady, you know, why they decided to get married, you know, at the conference. And these were very tall people, I might add. I mean, Lee Carroll said, boy, her legs go up to here. and she told me that that a Lemurian showed up at the foot of her bed one night and told her that they wanted them to get married at the Mount Shasta conference. So I thought that was interesting.
Wow.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, not long ago, Tom, I was in a Starbucks, and I told this story, I think, last week, that literally there was a gentleman that was very tall and very white skinned, 7 foot and a half. He was huge.
Wow.
And he came in and sat down. He had a laptop. And I just couldn't take my eyes off of him. And
yeah.
And I stood up literally when he was standing up because I was so shocked how tall he was. I wanted a comparison. And then maybe in about 15, 20 minutes, his girlfriend or someone came in that was like him. She was about maybe 6 inches shorter than he was, but still, yeah, I mean, it was just so obvious. They're lanky and very tall and slender. And, wow, it just really, you know, you realize that there's another species hanging around.
Yes, and they say, you know, they'll continue this sort of interaction, but their main deal that they have is that they work with people that have reached a certain vibrational level, and
yeah.
they work in our dream time, and it's very esoteric knowledge. Because I asked them, I said, well, because I know that I'm from this water planet that Anturus from, and I know I was supposedly some type of spiritual leader there, and I asked, I said, why wouldn't this information be available to me, you know, because of having so many lives on this other planet? And I was told no, that this information is above that, and that in my life as this shaman, along with Reveals the Mysteries, which I didn't mention that he told me that I was a shaman at that same time period in the 1600s. As this shaman, he said I was one of their regulars, as he called me, in studying in my dream time. So they do a service to, you know, thousands of people in dream time, and I don't know how it works. That's one of the sort of mysteries that I maybe we'll learn about someday. But I was told that if people request benevolent outcomes and keep requesting, they will raise their vibrational levels. Some people it might be only several months, and others it could be several years, to a point where they'll be able to visit and take part in these esoteric classes in their dream time.
Wow.
Now, during the times of Lemuria and Atlantis, did they work with people from other galaxies or other planets?
Up until the Earth Directive came along, and that's when these sort of ET uncles and aunts of ours figured out that these places were going to destroy themselves, and so the Earth Directive came down that they were to leave us completely alone, because they were, you know, they were trying to use the information that they'd get to be more powerful and to have it over another country or something like that, and so they could see this is not going good, and so several hundred years before they destroyed themselves, their Earth Directive came down and they left, and you know, these people were they couldn't tell them why they were leaving, and it was like, you know, you were set adrift in a boat suddenly, you know, before you had these great contacts and with these beings from other planets, and then suddenly they're gone, and it was quite perplexing to the people at that time period.
Now, do you, I don't know if you've asked this question, but if we were to go into war, would they come down and help us at this time?
No. Not at all.
They'll have the same
The Earth Directive. Do what?
I said they have the same instructions for us as they did for Atlantis and Lemuria.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Earth Directive will be in effect all the way, just almost as long as the Earth as the Earth experiment is going on, and we're still supposed to have contact. These pesky Russians that I had put in my last book, First Contact, were supposed to be the ones to have full disclosure, but they keep dragging their feet. And only in the last two or three weeks was I told that the ETs that are handling these negotiations or what have you, talks with the Russians, are making a little progress. But what I found I do now is that I'll ask Theo for a probability of when the Russians are going to disclose, you know, like in the next 3 months. I'll say, what's the probability of the Russians disclosing in the next 3 months? And this was like a month or two ago. I was told it was very, very low, like 30% or so. And so probably around July, I'll ask again. Because when I talked to Antura, you know, my good old soul cluster brother, he's always very positive. Oh, yeah, things, we're working on it. You know, it's you know, we know it's going to happen really soon. but I get the better information from Theo on probabilities. That's one of the major things that I've learned in the past 2 years is about probabilities, because I think in this next newsletter that's coming out this week, someone was asking me about the probability of a war taking place somewhere or whatever. I'm sorry, I can't remember. Or the probability, another one was this week is going to be the probability of a meteor striking Puerto Rico, and these are almost nil, okay? So I can ask for probabilities, and that's the thing. They said if you sometimes a psychic, and they pointed out that I was doing I used to do the same thing, that when a psychic can tune into a probability, and maybe it's a very low probability, but it's a very dramatic or violent one or something like that. And so that's the one that they come out with, and they don't understand that if they would ask for the probability of that happening, they would see that it's very low and others are very high. So I've learned to try and ask questions on anything like that in the future, asking about probabilities, because I get a much closer answer to what's actually coming up.
Tom,
there's a full contact, I mean, a disclosure, it's going to come through Russia?
Yeah, they said that the reason for that is that the Russian people would not be so afraid and not be so mad at their government or whatever for keeping these secrets, because they know that the Russian government keeps all these secrets, and so it won't get them so upset as it would, say, people in the United States that would really have a cat in learning that we've been, we've had contacts. Even Eisenhower had a meeting with ETs, but it was agreed at that time that the people would be too afraid to learn that information, and so they're trying to keep on our timetable to the point where the people are ready and will not feel like they're going to be all, the earth is going to be destroyed by another invasion, Los Angeles or something like that.
Well, you've talked about everybody being, that we're all ETs anyhow.
Yes.
So.
But we don't remember that.
But we don't remember that, yeah. You spoke about your, that I think it was in First Contact, that there was a first public contact by Palladians in 2015. Is that still going to be?
No. First of all comes the Russian disclosure. That has to come first. Now, maybe
okay.
They'll tighten up the time from the time they have first disclosure to the time they have the Palladians come in, but the first disclosure with the Russians has to happen first, and so far, Putin's been more interested in grabbing parts of the Ukraine than he has been in allowing that information to be put up.
Well, I think the Pope is even starting to prepare us because, he said it was possible.
Oh, sure.
They've
made a couple of comments from the Vatican about, the Creator, may have created people on other planets too, or something like that. I'm way paraphrasing that. I don't have the exact quotation.
Well, after disclosure, do you think that would almost force peace upon us, or we would know that there's somebody more powerful and that we would have to unite? Or
again, it's this old spoon feed us kind of thing. I mean, the only thing that they may talk about in the first couple of visits will be our history. We're here. We've been here for you. We've had your back for 10 million years. Because these ETs were told by the Creator to create a body that would be adaptable and be able to withstand all the rigors of the Earth. And so for several million years, these ET scientists, they knew how to create bodies, but they didn't have much practical experience. That's what I've been told in the book. And so they would try out all types of things, everything from the Lucy models, that they found in Africa with lower brain capacities. And by the way, all of these models were ensouled because all of our souls wanted to get their feet wet in having lives on Earth to get prepared for the ones when they finally decided on the Adam and Eve model, which was decided on about 60,000 years ago. So up until then, they had the Cro-Magnons, they had the Neanderthals. The Neanderthals, by the way, were cannibalistic, and so it never appeared that there were as many Neanderthals around as there were Cro-Magnons, because they would eat each other. If somebody got too old, why, they would just kill them and eat them. and there were other types of body models that they had. There was one group of about 1,000 that one of the ETs tried, and I call them in the book the rock wall people, because there's been this rock wall that's been discovered in Rock Wall, Texas, okay, which is is only, it's about, I don't know, 30 miles from me or something like that. And half of the people that have analyzed it say, oh, it's just a natural formation. And the other half say, yeah, it looks like it was built by somebody. And so I ask about it. And these people, as the oceans of the world, you know, were receding back, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of years ago, whatever, there were these people that lived in this area for about 200 years, and they built the rock wall because of the ocean, you know, to keep the ocean out from, I guess, the storms of what eventually became the Gulf of Mexico. But they moved on after 200 years because the ocean kept receding, and they were eventually destroyed in one of the massive increases in the water levels. The other one was up in, like, Michigan, where they were I was told they were kind of an earlier model and a little less intelligent, but there were several thousand of those types of people.
Well, Tom, the oceans are rising now for us. because I just thought about what the question that you were asked in your newsletter is. Somebody asked if the rising oceans would affect San Francisco Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's coming out in this issue. Very apropos for us talking today. So.
Yeah. So did you? Well, can we have a peek?
Yeah,
a
peek. Yes. If you'll hold for half a second, I'll. It says. I was asked this by one of my readers. See, one of the things about my newsletter, it's all predicated on questions come into me from all over the world, and I get to them as fast as I can. Sometimes it's a couple of weeks or so, but eventually I will. And if I don't, I always tell people to send me an email and rattle my cage, because every once in a while an email will drop into what I call the twilight zone, and you know, I'm not able to I forget to ask the question. But so I said, Gaia, what impact will the rising ocean levels have on the San Francisco Peninsula besides the 2 foot higher water level that's going to be coming in like a couple of years or so? Yes, Tom, one cannot be separated from the other. The rise in water levels will cause storm surges to reach higher on the peninsula. There will be more destruction from any storms which come from the Pacific. It will also cause major problems with their transportation, as low-lying streets will be frequently closed. They will try to prevent the encroachment, but will only be partially or minimally successful. As you recall, I have said numerous times over the past few years that I wish people to move away from the coast to give them time, to give the coast time to rest. I have suggested numerous times for people to move of their own free will now, and if they do not, they will be forced to later with the loss of their properties. I understand, Tom, that you could be accused of crying wolf, but my messages to you have remained constant on this topic. The alarm bells will be sounding, shall we say, in the near future. Take that to the bank, as you might say. And then someone else was asking me about climate change and how soon the West Indies, the low-lying islands, or some of the low-lying islands of the Philippines would go under, and I was told within the next 2 years.
And plus, we're going to have El Nino storms. I mean, that's the scientists say that.
Yes, and look what's happening right now to Texas. You know, we're having a tropical storm, and so far on my rain gauge, and it's still raining off and on today. I've already had over 2 inches of rain, and some of the places have had 3 and 4 inches already. So, and this is North Texas. This is not even like the Houston area or Galveston, where they probably had 4, 6, or more inches of rain. And of course, we've had more rain this year than it's getting close to what we typically have for a whole year, if not it's gone over by now. And that's, you know, we were all in a drought, extreme drought, and suddenly all these floods came, and all of our lakes, I mean every lake almost around, is over the top. Nobody can go boating, fishing, or anything because the lakes are just so high.
Well, California is the opposite. We're going through the drought now, so maybe...
I know we'd love to sell you some of our water. just build a pipeline.
let people know right now who we're talking with and give
sure.
out your website. We're talking with Tom Moore, and his website is thegentlewaybook.com. Don't forget to sign up for his newsletters. They are incredible. And familiarized. Yeah, they're free. Yeah. And
so far, I've been able to do that. But I might add, my sign-up function on the homepage of the website is not working. If anybody knows anything about newsletter mailer, I think it's called, my sign-up function just is not working. I'd love to give somebody one or two signed books if they can figure out how to fix my sign-up function. But otherwise, please email me at tomtmoore, the number six, at AOL.com. That's tomtmoore6@AOL.com, and I'll sign you up. But it's been very frustrating that we haven't been able to get the thing fixed.
Oh, geez. Well, we need to send out some benevolent prayers.
Thank you.
Have that come in right away. We can't let it go by.
And actually, one of my readers sent in, she said, print this out, and we can all ask for everybody to request benevolent prayers that your sign-up function will work. I appreciate that.
Yes, definitely.
So
the
website is www.thegentlewaybook.com. And maybe, and you know, as far as the Atlantis and Lemuria, the Lost Continents Revealed book, its official date is supposed to be in September, but I know my publisher, which is Light Technology, and they publish the Sedona Journal of Emergence. I do know that they'll start selling it as soon as it's back from the bindery. So if someone wants to buy it early and not wait till September and to buy it on Amazon or wherever you buy your books, then you can buy it direct from my publisher. One other thing, I'll give a little plug for my publisher today, the Sedona Light Technology. The Sedona Journal has a special on right now that if you go to Sedona Journal, sedonajournal.com/promo, I think it says, something like that. But you can just go to the website. They have a special going on that if you take out a subscription to the magazine, you'll get a free astrological reading. You send them your birth date and location, that kind of stuff. They'll send you back that, and I think that's a pretty neat deal. That because most of these astrology things typically advertise it somewhere around $25 or so, and also you get to read their latest issue, the June issue, free, so you can get an idea of what's in the magazine. So anyway,
it's
that's
a great
my plug
magazine.
For the
yeah,
plug
yeah,
for the
yeah.
magazine today.
Tom,
I have
thank
a monthly
you.
Column.
Thank you so much for being with us today. We're just happy to have you back. And after your new book pops in, we look forward to hearing from you and having you with us again.
Well, thank you. I enjoy it. And I hope everyone will think about looking for that book, and also, you know, even buying the first Gentle Way book, which came out in 2006. This modality is the best modality. It's 100 times better than the Law of Attraction. I've been voted best self-help author for the last 2 years by the readers of the Health and Happiness magazine. It really, truly does work, and it'll change your life.
Hmm. Yeah, sure will, because I do it all the time. So, in fact, I did it before our interview today to make sure everything went smoothly.
Yeah, we did too.
And it did.
Okay.
So, well, thank you so much for being
Colin.
With us.
Yeah.
Okay.
And happy journeys.
Okay. Happy trails,
bye-bye.
Everyone.
Blessings. Bye-bye.